Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 2 of the Talking TV Podcast. I'm Cody.
And I'm Faris. Okay, so just before we get started, I just wanted to say a big thank you to Heroine TV, Lucia, for posting the pilot episode of our podcast on her blog and kind of giving us a little shout out. We really appreciate it. If you don't know who Heroine TV is, then you can find her at heroinetv.com, where she does all sorts of recaps, reviews, and has her own podcast, which is also really great. Highly recommend listening to it. And you can find her at heroine_TV at Twitter for all the get lots of TV tweets. She's really great. Highly recommend it. And just want to say, yeah, thanks so much for posting on your blog. If you're listening, Lucia, thank you so much.
Before we get started, we'd like to warn everyone that there will indeed be spoilers. So if you're not caught up on any of the episodes, we encourage you to pause it and come back after. So let's get into it.
We shoot them, they're dead. Why do we want them to float away?
Because it's cool.
Yeah, okay. So first up, we're going to be talking about the Fringe series finale, which was a two-parter. Fringe kind of was going out on a big one, I guess. What were your thoughts on the series finale, Cody?
Well, I think like it was like they had two parts to go to end out on, and I really liked what they did in the first part with kind of giving fans a last look at the alternate universe, because that's something that has really, like, the alternate universe has played a huge part in the show from seasons 1 to 4, and then at the end of season 4 they kind of just, you know, cut the alternate universe out of it because it can't be there for story reasons. And like, here we got our last little look at it, and it was nice seeing how those characters came along. You know, Lincoln got his wish and he got Olivia, and they have a son, or alternate Olivia, and they have a son, and they're running the Fringe Division over there, and over there is actually fine. Like, there's been no observer attacks or invasions, so they're doing really well over there, and it just made me realize how much I missed it.
It was a shame that we didn't get to see more of it, but it was nice that at least we got to see the last glimpse of the Altverse. I was wondering, though, why they never really explained why the observers didn't invade there as well, because clearly it seems like they can cross over at will. So you would think they would want to, like, have two universes if they could.
But maybe, I thought of that too, and maybe they thought that over there was more damaged than, like, over here, because they had all those problems for, like, when we first met the over there characters, they had a huge bunch of problems, and their universe was basically going to explode or something like that. And maybe the observers just thought it was too damaged to take over. Like, maybe it wasn't worth it.
Yeah, because I actually didn't think of that. That's a fairly good point. It was cool to see that verse again, and I really liked that first episode. Because, yeah, it was just cool to see that verse again and see what Olivia and Lincoln Lee were up to, and kind of that they'd got married and had a kid and done all this stuff. So it was nice seeing them again, and it was interesting seeing, like, Olivia kind of, like, what they, or the producers and stuff, imagined her as, you know, older, with her older makeup, and getting to see the kind of the older version of Olivia versus the you know, the younger, 20-year younger, I guess, version of Olivia. And that funny little line where she was like, "Stop checking out my younger ass," or something like that.
I love that. So I guess part two of the episode, you got to talk about the big, you know, this is it. This is the last episode of Fringe ever that we'll ever get. They're talking about a movie. I heard something about a movie, but that's complete bullshit. Just leave it.
Yeah, there's always like, maybe they'll do a movie. There was talk of, like, Friday Night Lights, the movie, and all this stuff, and Party Down movie, Veronica Mars movie, blah, blah, blah. You know, none of it's happening.
No, even, like, Fringe has had a season to close out. You know, they shouldn't need a movie. Veronica Mars, I would welcome that movie. Friday Night Lights. You don't need that movie.
Yeah, we don't need Friday Night Lights, the movie. I mean, I'd watch it, but we don't need it. Veronica Mars, I would love that, but probably not going to happen. I found myself thinking about all the different timelines, and it's just really, really confusing at this point, where you've got season 1 to 3 timeline, season 4 and 5 timeline, and then the new timeline that's not only erase season 5, but also rewritten season 4 if the Observers never existed.
Ugh. Yeah, that's part of what confused me, because we talked about the reset last week, and it was one of our questions were how much will anyone remember anything from what's happened in season 5? And you kind of get a sense in the end that maybe they do, because it looked like the look on Olivia's face, and I think her eyes, it looked like she still has Cortexafan in her system, so she might remember. And then the look on Peter's face when he opened the letter, that was, you know, that's the last shot of the show. That's a look of maybe he does remember, maybe he doesn't. It's left up to your own interpretation.
Yeah. And I think it's left up to your own interpretation as to what that thing meant. Obviously, it was from Walter, but, or at least that's what I, you know, assumed it was. But what does it kind of, was it, what does it mean? Does it mean that, I don't know, that was from future Walter, or?
No, I mean, that was from.
But it was just like, was it from our Walter then? Because I thought he was, or not, but you know, 2015 Walter.
I get the sense that was from like our Walter, like that was from, because you know, in 2015, he was working on this plan with September. And like at the, I think it was the start of the episode when Peter found the tape addressed to him. That's what he would like, that's what that whole thing meant, was meant to be viewed after the timeline was altered. So Peter gets the tulip, wonders what's up, goes to find Walter, finds the tape, and then still probably a little confused about what happened, unless he remembers. But that's what I took that to mean, was that it's for that. But the thing that is confusing is, since they changed time with Michael, have the Observers ever existed? Because they say it's to stop the creation of the Observers, but they reset time up to 2015. So, did they still exist up until 2015?
Well, what I got from it was that they send Michael into the future, and then that stops the scientist guy from ever, like, you know, creating the Observers. So then that completely rewrites time. He never creates Observers. Observers, the 12, never go back. They never invade. So they've never, ever existed, ever, in the new end of season 5 timeline.
But, even if that were so, like, you wonder, like, you figure how big of a part the Observers played in seasons 1 to 4.
Well, they wouldn't have been in it then, would they? Because they don't. And then if season 1 to 4, according to the end of season 5, they would never have been in the show.
But if that were the case, would Peter and Olivia still be together if none of this stuff ever happened? Like, and would time reset to that point? Because, you know, would they have met? And would that have still happened even if they had?
Well, all this stuff with the pattern and things would have happened in the universe, you know, war and kind of whatever the way they changed it in season 4 would have still happened, just without Observers. So Peter would be able to still be alive because he died both times in the season 4 timeline, and then was, I don't know, whatever it was, he was brought back into creation in season 4. I can't remember how, probably through love or something stupid. So they can still meet and everything in the new season four timeline that's been re-altered by season 5. So the new, fuck it, I don't know. It's, stuff happened. It was crazy. As far as the actual finale goes, I enjoyed it. I wasn't kind of like blown away by it, but there were some really good emotional beats in it that worked best for me, like when Walter said that Astrid had a lovely name or something, and when he said that Peter was his most favourite thing, that definitely made me tear up.
Jesus Christ, I almost lost it right there, and it wasn't even the end of the episode.
Yeah.
And something else that really made me tear up was the end, right before he goes through when Peter whispered, "I love you, Dad," and I was like, "Oh fuck, why?"
Yeah, they had some. Fringe has always been, you know, for all its kind of faults in the last two seasons, especially season four and its kind of ups and downs, it's always been able to hit those emotional beats really well. Like, you know, when Peter and Olivia get back together in season, or get together for the fact, whatever, in season four, and, you know, all the stuff in the finale, and when Etta died in episode four, which I think they should have kept her around longer, but this is my two cents.
Now, do you think that they should have had more time showing us what happened after the reset, or do you think it was done in the right amount of time?
You know, it's a tough call. I think at the end of the day, the whole Observer invasion just felt kind of like unnecessary in the end. I mean, I liked the idea a lot, and there was a lot of season five that I did like, but once you reset the whole timeline, the whole thing just becomes like, it's like I was saying last week, well, why don't I just tune in for this, you know, the series finale? And that whole thing has just felt like, at the end of the day, once they'd done what they did in the finale, just became sort of pointless, you know. That kind of annoyed me, but at the same time I was like, well, I'm kind of glad that they had this plan the whole season and kind of stuck to it. So I guess it goes both ways. I kind of didn't really answer the question there. I guess if we'd seen more after the invasion, I probably would have liked that. But budget-wise, I don't know if they could have done it, like, with Observers taking over the whole world. But it might have been cool to see. I would have liked, actually, more of Desmond from Lost, whose name I'm forgetting right now.
Henry Ian Cusack?
Yes, I would have liked more of him because he was in 419. I would have been cool if they hadn't killed him off and we'd had him in a few episodes in season four or something. Or season five, sorry.
Yeah, and going back to what you were saying about how, like, none of it really happened since they reset it, what it really reminded me of was that, do you remember that one episode of Stargate 2010 where they had to send a message to themselves back in time not to ever go to this one planet so that this alien race wouldn't take over and slowly kill everyone off?
Yeah, I remember that one, yeah.
Yeah, that's what the finale kind of reminded me of, in some ways.
Yeah, no, I can see what you're saying, totally, because it's the same sort of situation where they rewrite time in that Stargate episode and that whole, all that stuff. I guess it jumped into, well, 2010, didn't it? So that stuff never happened.
Yeah. And another thing that really shocked me was I expected Leonard Nimoy to be in this episode, and he wasn't around at all.
Yeah, he didn't. I guess he's finally, like, actually retired. I thought one thing that was cool was all the callback to the old Fringe cases when they dumped that stuff in the Observers, wherever it was, all those Observers got killed. And it was like a callback to all the old cases with the butterfly things and the like kind of chestburster type squiddy looking thing.
Yeah, I'd expected something like that to happen. I think I mentioned that last week. And while I'm not that familiar with the earlier episodes of Fringe, a hardcore fan would have probably really loved that. As a series finale, where do you think this stands in the long line of great series finales? It was pretty quiet, but it still seems to be drumming up lots of questions and controversy, not as much as Lost. It did a great service to the show, I found.
No, I think a lot of it did work, and some of it didn't work, like I've said. But I think, you know, 3 years down the line, 5 years down the line, we probably won't be talking about it as much as Lost, only because Lost was so controversial. And at the end of the day, I think I kind of preferred the Lost finale. I just remember after the Lost finale, I remember being like super psyched and being like, wow, that was so awesome and emotional and like really great. And, you know, and I still kind of, for the most part, stand up for it these years later. And I kind of wasn't like that with Fringe. I was like, yeah, that was pretty cool. And it kind of like really hit me hard emotionally in some places. But I don't know, it just doesn't feel like it will live on in the general sort of consensus of, you know, the wider population in, you know, 5 years down the line or something.
That's just Yabba Dabba Doo that you've added a G to. Scrabba Dabba Doo. Yeah, that's not an original. That's stolen. Scrabba Dabba
Doo. I have never seen such joy on anyone's face as when I did when Max got the vending machines into the school. That, like, I don't think I've... Has that kid ever smiled?
You know, I don't think he has. Maybe when he's talking about bugs.
Yeah, it was... But I can't help but feel like his victory is kind of pointless, maybe, because did he want vending machines with Skittles in them, or did he just want to make good on the promise that he said he would get them back, even though there's oranges and bananas and apples in them and stuff like that?
I mean, maybe it was a bit of both. I think at the end of the day, it was about vending machines as a, maybe as an idea rather than what's in them. It's like the school reneging on some sort of like deal that they've had, or, you know.
The Hank Mark battle continued this week, and I really liked how Mark kind of stepped up, and he's just like, you know, I'm not putting up with this bullshit. I'm going to get her back. And I love that he said it to Hank's face, because he basically called Hank a coward for, you know, kissing Sarah and then seemingly just breaking them up.
Yeah, it was kind of an interesting, it was an interesting moment from Mark, and something you wouldn't necessarily think to see from that character. But it was kind of like you can see how much he loves Sarah despite her flaws. He's standing his ground. But I also like that Hank sort of confronted Sarah, and she was all like so shocked, and you know, and you're just like, oh, fuck off, Sarah, come on, you're still in love with Mark. And you know, but it was nice for Hank to kind of say, you know, listen, you've got to decide what you want, because I know what I want.
Yeah, next week's going to be have lots of tough choices, I think, when it comes to Sarah, because she's got the ultimate choice, like many others have had. Angel or Spike, Edward or Jacob, Mark and Hank.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be right up there. We'll start getting Mark, Hank, shipper t-shirts and stuff, and you know, maybe make some little fan trailers too.
I would buy a shirt with Jason Ritter's face on it.
Oh, I think we all would. As far as the little subplot with Crosby versus Jasmine, Jasmine's mum, who do you think was in the right on that one?
I can tell you right now, I went through something very similar to Crosby, because earlier, just a few months ago, we had one of my fiance's friends come live with us. And the deal was for her to stay here, find a job, get enough money, and get out on her own, when really she just sat around for a few weeks and did nothing.
So she's not listening.
Yeah. So she just sat around for 3 weeks before she actually got the job, and it was only supposed to hopefully be a month tops, and she was here for two, and even then, in the end, it was a struggle to actually get her out. We had to flat out tell her, you know, you've got to go. And I feel for Crosby in this situation, even though it's different because it is Jasmine's mother.
Yeah.
I think he should be, if he wants Renee out of his house, he should try maybe looking for a job too. Maybe see if his mom knows of anything for people their age. Like, he can be helping instead of just standing around.
No, that's true. And I think maybe he could have been slightly less aggressive about the way he was, confronting Jasmine's mom. But I think at the end of the day, personally, from where I was coming from, I mean, I've never really been in that situation, but I was pretty much on Crosby's side, because I feel like, yeah, Renee, I felt like she was being, you know, that kind of like that disapproving mother, kind of judgmental. And it's like Crosby and Jasmine are adults living, you know, living together, married with Jabbar, and to do that to them is kind of just a little like, you know, it's Jabbar's their parents. I think they should be making the decisions whether you think, you know, they're the right ones or the wrong ones. Obviously, if it's something absolutely ridiculous, then you pipe up, you know, Jabbar's on drugs, you say something. But, you know, when it comes to things like, you know, snack bars or whatever, I just think I'd say, you know, for the most part, Crosby was in the right on that one.
Yeah, and I did not like how she pulled out the, well, for 5 years before you came along, that was a fucking low blow, because, you know, Jasmine didn't tell Crosby about Jabbar until, you know, he was five. So that was a really kind of bitchy thing to pull out on him, to be like, you know, oh, you weren't a parent for the first 5 years of his life. I was within the first 5 years of his life, not you.
Yeah, exactly. Renee just really grinds my gears sometimes. Her whole attitude is very sort of judgmental sometimes, and that kind of like, I don't know, I'm not angry, I'm just disappointed sort of thing.
Yeah. What do you think of the stuff that's going on with Joel, Victor, and Julia?
I kind of feel for Victor. I mean, I feel for all of them, really, because you can sort of see where Victor's coming from and that he's kind of lashing out in this, you know, and it sort of stemmed from that thing where he couldn't show his mum his test. And then he's kind of just, it sort of spiraled from there. But I think it looks like things are on the mend. But I also I felt for Julia as well because she was having a hard time with it. And, you know, it's tough when you feel like, you know, your kid, your new adopted kid doesn't love you. And it's one of those, you know, it's one of those things that just, it can be kind of an emotional sort of beating in terms of just, you know, she's trying to do everything, you know, right, and Victor is just not responding. But it looks like things are on the mend.
Yeah, and they knew, like, they were faced with the decision pretty quickly to adopt Victor. It was like, now or never, you can take him or whatever. And I think if they had had time, then they would have been able to go over the pros and cons of adopting a kid his age, because especially from the home that he comes from, like, he's from a broken home, and he's gonna act out, and he's gonna have questions about his mom and stuff like that.
Yeah, and it, you know, it's tough when you're coming from that kind of life. But also, I thought it was funny when he called Sydney, he called her a little kiss ass or something like that, because she totally is. She always is doing everything her mum and dad says, and you know, just every time Victor does something that's sort of against the rules or goes to watch TV, she's like, Victor's doing this, Victor's doing that.
Yeah, I know Sydney can crack me up a lot, but I feel like a lot of this season, you know, there hasn't been a whole lot of focus on her as there has been on Victor, in terms of like Joel and Julia, you know, their parenting. It's been mostly just focus towards Victor.
Yeah.
What was the Nodel Tower? How do you not remember that?
I was Wi-Fi free for a few years.
So, Arrow, the villain of the week format continues with Arrow, and we got a little something more this week with a Batman villain with Firefly, even though this version of Firefly's origins weren't Gotham City or anything. It was very much a Starling City villain, but I thought he didn't really seem like the main focus of the episode. It was just kind of a thing to get Oliver back into doing what he does, and they didn't really seem to do a whole lot with Firefly.
Yeah, I kind of felt like he was pretty much wasted in the episode. He just sort of came in, set some people on fire, then was there at the end, set the club on fire, and then died. And it was just sort of like, that's it, you know. It just felt like they could have done more with him.
Yeah, and the main focus of the episode was supposed to be Oliver's self-doubt, like, you know, him getting the shit kicked out of him and wondering if he's even right to protect the city anymore.
Yeah, that kind of was the main focus, really. The main problem I had with this episode was the fact that one of the firemen was Laurel's best friend, Joe, I think her name is, her brother died. And I just kind of, I felt like that was a little bit of a cheap ploy, because it was supposed to make us care more. But at the end of the day, I couldn't give a shit about Joe or her brother, who we'd never met before. You know what I mean? It was just sort of like Joe was there to sort of be a bit sexy and sassy and hand Laurel some files. And it was just like, why am I caring that her brother is dead? You know what I mean? It was just, that to me just didn't work.
Yeah, and it felt like it was, a lot of it was meant to push the Tommy and Laurel thing more, because it's like, oh, my best friend's brother died, and Tommy's like, I'm going to throw a fundraiser for the firemen. And it felt like, you know, because Tommy does that, and then Laurel's like, you know, will be like, oh, Tommy, you've got such a nice heart.
Oh, Tommy, let's fuck.
Even though your dad's an evil bastard.
Yeah. Did you notice Laurel's entrance into the fireman's party or whatever it was like super duper, like CW, like the sexy pan up the legs with the kind of club music?
Oh, yeah, totally.
thought that was funny.
So along with all of her self-doubt and stuff, you had the question of what did Tommy's dad do with Walter? Where's Walter?
Yeah, that was kind of still hasn't been. And apparently it's been 6 weeks or something since Walter's been, well, we know he's been kidnapped, since Walter's gone missing. And Mum was in a bit of a funk, even though she kind of was part of it, I guess. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see what will have happened with Walter. I don't think they'll have killed him off.
No, they especially wouldn't do that off screen. He's a major character, I find. And it would, and Malcolm Merlyn said, he told Moira, he's like, we're not going to hurt him, but then we're just going to steal him for 6 weeks at least. And I'm wondering when he's going to come back into it and when they're going to bring him back and where his story's going to go, because Moira is very, you get the sense that she's a part of this evil organization, but they're trying to humanize her, so it's like, I don't really know what to feel about her. Do I feel sorry for her? Is she a good guy? Is she a bad guy? I just don't know.
Yeah, I kind of, at first, I thought, like, at the end of the pilot, they're like, oh, they're going to turn her into this arch kind of villain who's part of some conspiracy. But now it seems like she's not, like, a willing part of the conspiracy, maybe, or is trying to, you know what I mean? So they're trying to give her a bit more depth, which I guess is good. They're trying to not make her some arch thing that's doing stuff behind Oliver's back. And I really hope that, is it Malcolm? I've forgotten his name. The husband?
Oh, Walter.
Walter, yeah, Malcolm, what am I talking about? Walter, I hope that he does come back soon, because he was just getting interesting. At first, like in the pilot, I thought he was just going to be the boring, like, I don't know, on the side of Mum, kind of not really doing anything. But now he seems like he's actually, they've given him some things to do. So I'm hoping he comes back soon. I liked his little kind of, him not hiring, but, you know, getting, what's her face, the woman who works in tech, to kind of investigate what's going on.
Yeah. Another thing in this episode was Detective Lance makes a questionable call by, like, putting a tracking device in the Arrow phone, I guess. And this kind of proves, like, he's not, like, he really is out to get Oliver, like, the vigilante, and
Green Arrow.
Yeah, Green Arrow. Let's just say Green Arrow for the sake of it. At the start of the show, you know, he's the cop, and you kind of get the sense maybe they'll try to do a Batman and Commissioner Gordon kind of relationship with Green Arrow and Detective Lance, but it seems like after what he just did to Laurel's phone, the Arrow phone or whatever, that there's no, he's no Jim Gordon. He's not the good-natured guy. He's good, but he will stop at nothing to put Green Arrow behind bars and unmask him.
Yeah, it was kind of a bit of a dick move, to be honest. And you kind of, I don't know, I just don't like that character at all. When he gave the phone back, I was like, oh, he's doing some, he's being a nice guy for once. Maybe he's starting to believe, like other people, like the lady on the news, that Green Arrow is, you know, doing some good. But then it was like, oh, nope.
Yeah, because in the last episode, like the mid-season finale, he had ruled Green Arrow out as a suspect of these new killings. He knew it was someone different, but the commissioner was like, no, we're going to blame it on Green Arrow, and that's that. And he's like, well, it's not him. Like, I'm not going to put someone who didn't do this behind bars. I thought that was supposed to be, like, a moment of hope for the character in terms of accepting Green Arrow as a part of the city and accepting him as a vigilante, but now it seems like that's totally just downhill now.
Yeah, and is it me, or does, like, Green Arrow need to get himself a mask already, or shades or something, not just this green paint?
Yeah, the green paint, it's stupid, because if he's got his head down the entire fucking time avoiding people, then he's gonna die sooner or later.
Yeah, and what if it's windy, he's outside, wind's blowing, his hood comes down, he's exposed. You know what I mean? Like, Green Arrow and Smallville had shades, but I'm glad at least that when he talks to Laurel, he has that thing that changes his voice, and he doesn't just do a gruff kind of Batman thing, because that would have really annoyed me if he'd, like, been, like, you know, right next to Laurel and just been speaking in a slightly gruffer voice. I'm at least glad they gave him the, you know, the voice changer.
Yeah, that's actually a really nice touch, and that's something that the Smallville Green Arrow did too. Like, he had a voice changer, except whenever the bad guy ran away in Smallville, Green Arrow had his fucking hood down and his shades off with just, you know, exposed out in the city where anyone could see, that's Oliver Queen.
You're listening, superheroes, you could take some tips from this.
Yeah. So, I hope they maybe eventually get a better setup for his mask or something. Like, maybe like an actual green mask or something.
Yeah, because he gave, what's her name? Oh my god, Huntress. She got a mask, you know?
Yeah.
So why can't Green Arrow have a mask? My hope is that in season two, if the show gets picked up, which it probably will, that they do maybe a redesign on the costume, nothing big, but just some small redesigns, and with that will come, they'll be like, okay, we need to give him a mask or shades or fucking anything.
You know, it's not like he can't afford a mask, like...
Yeah, he's got all these awesome gadgets. Like, why can't he just get a mask? Easy, done.
Next thing you know, they're going to have him buying a mask, and he's going to have to buy two different parts of it, 10,000 units each to avoid suspicion.
I don't think they'll go that far. We haven't found out where he gets all his gadgets from. They're not as thorough as Batman.
Yeah.
And that's a wrap on Arrow.
Was that necessary? No, but it was fun.
When I finished watching the recent episode of The Vampire Diaries, I heard 1.5 million Stefan and Elena fans crying out in pain, and it put a smile on my face.
Tumblr was crying itself to sleep that night.
Yeah, just that made me happy, kind of, because I think they should give Stefan and Elena a break, but that's just me.
Yeah, I want to see the Sire bond broken and then see what happens with Stefan. Stefan, Damon and Elena, and see if it is, you know, quote unquote, true love, or if it is just a Sire bond.
Yeah, and along with that, it seems like they actually are setting up this Silas character to be the new big bad.
Yeah, I wonder if they'll do a Klaus and he gets introduced in the finale or the last couple episodes, and then is the big bad for season five, because there was even Colin. Cole was like, oh, he'll kill us all, and didn't kill him, but thought he killed the creepy professor guy.
Yeah, that was interesting to see, like, the originals are actually afraid of Silas, so, it makes you think, like, he's got to have some power for the original vampires to quiver in fear of him.
Yeah, and it was great to see Rebecca back as well, because I love Rebecca, and I liked her little, her little chat with everyone as she made... She forced Elena to tell Stefan that she was in love with Damon.
Yeah, that was great. Like, she just, you know, she was completely hardcore, no holds barred. And then she made Tyler change into a werewolf, which was cool. Even though I thought he was supposed to be doing that without any pain now because he broke the Sire bond. But
yeah, I think maybe when you're compelled, then maybe it's a different situation.
Yeah, because like he didn't want to change, so maybe it. Maybe he was trying to hold it back and that maybe hurt a little bit.
Yeah, they were trying to resist it was what caused the pain maybe. But yeah, it was great to see Rebecca back because there was some stuff in like season four and season three where she was like trying to be a high school student and like was setting up prom or something and trying to like, you know, go after Matt. And you were just like, she's an original vampire, super duper powerful. Why does she care about these things? So it's nice to see her be kind of a badass again in 410.
Yeah, and now Jeremy, he's doing all this training, this vampire hunter stuff, and did he automatically, I forget, did he learn, like when he got chosen to be a hunter, did all of these fighting techniques just automatically go, like, was he just automatically a good fighter and had more strength? Did that...
I can't remember. I think when you find out that you're a hunter, maybe it gives you like extra strength or something, or just more heightened, you know, kind of senses or skills or something. I'm not sure if they ever explicitly said.
And one thing I'm really curious about when it comes to Jeremy is now that he's like the hunter and he was chosen and all this stuff, does the resurrection ring still work for him? Is he technically classified a supernatural being now?
Oh, yeah. I never thought about that. And is it me, or is it just like a massive coincidence that Jeremy's a hunter? I mean, out of all the people in the world.
Yeah, I suppose they got to give him a little something to do, because last season he was talking to ghosts and...
Yeah, but it just kind of feels like everybody's, you know, something these days, apart from like Matt. You know, everyone's a vampire or a werewolf, and now he's a hunter. It just feels like they've got to give everyone some sort of supernatural something.
Yeah, I think I would have liked it better if they hadn't been like, oh, he's a chosen hunter. I think it would have been better had he been more like Alaric, and like he wasn't chosen. He was just decided to do this because he wanted some kind of revenge and, you know, just take up, learn fighting skills and do the best you can with all these gadgets and stuff. And I think that would have been really cool to do. And I was hoping that they would do that for Elena. Like, they showed last season Alaric training Elena a little bit, and I was hoping that they would make her kind of like a Buffy type, just like, not in terms of like the strength or the Slayer powers, but like just getting out there and kicking ass for herself instead of, you know, like Stefan or Damon swooping in at the last minute, you know.
Yeah, well, I guess they can do that now she's a vampire, but she mostly seems to be whining, and whether they'll undo her vampirism with the cure once they find what's his face, the new big bad guy. But it just seemed just like, just really, just Elena, just, you know, get over yourself. Caroline's fine as a vampire. She's awesome as a vampire. Just, you know, just feel like Elena needs to get over herself a little bit.
Yeah, and that's the thing. Caroline was the biggest fucking drama queen this side of Mystic Falls, and she handled being a vampire. Like, she was a little freaked out at first, but she got used to it. And now Elena, every fucking episode, she's crying about it.
Yeah, it's just like, yawn, you know, move, you know, please, when are you going to be a cool badass like Caroline? Because she's like my favorite character on the show, probably her and Rebecca. And I just feel like, just let's have a look at Caroline. She's doing pretty much fine. You know, some romantic troubles here and there, but that's, you know, everyone in Mystic Falls. I just feel like Elena just needs to slap out of it.
Yeah, like, I think, because remember she had the hallucination of Catherine and stuff like that. I wish they would actually bring Catherine back and just seriously slap some fucking sense into her.
Oh god, that would be great. Catherine would just whip her into shape pronto and probably applaud her for sleeping with Damon.
Like I don't understand why they don't bring Catherine back. It's not like it costs any extra money to have Catherine in the show.
No, they have to pay Nina Dobrev double for each episode.
I hope they bring that character back, because yeah. I really love Catherine. She's hilarious.
Yeah, she's great, and I'm glad now that we know who, for certain, who killed all the people in the premiere.
Oh, yeah. Fucking creepy Professor Shane.
So he killed those guys with, like, a sacrifice for what's-his-face, the big bad. And then also the werewolves were a sacrifice for the big bad as well.
That's what I thought in the last episode. I thought all the hybrids were supposed to be... I thought they were all supposed to be sacrifices because he needed 12 and Haley gave him the 12 and stuff like that.
Yeah, because Haley gave him the 12 because he said he could find Haley's parents. So... So maybe he needed 12 hybrids, 12 humans?
Not sure. Possibly.
Yeah.
I don't know. We're going to have to wait and see how the season progresses and where that story goes.
Yeah. Hey, maybe Haley's parents has something to do with the backdoor pilot.
That could be too, considering that she'll be in the originals. Maybe she'll... Yeah.
You're serious?
That's his serious face, yes.
Alrighty, Supernatural. I'm wondering why the producers on Supernatural just don't make Misha Collins a regular again.
I don't know, maybe. He's got a kid now, doesn't he? So that might be something to do with it.
Yeah, but I feel this season they're definitely doing more with Cass than they were previous seasons. Especially, like, even when he died and stuff. Like, he seems to be playing more of an important role. Like, he's the unwilling mole, and he can't help it. He can't do anything about it. He just has to do what he's told. Like, he doesn't even remember what he's doing.
Yeah, I love all that stuff with whenever it jumps to him and Amanda tapping in the Stargate base where he has to follow her orders.
I hope she gets out and about a little more, and hope, you know, obviously it seems like the bond that she's having over him seems to be breaking a little bit. And hopefully it will fully break and she'll come face to face and get out of the office and get out and about and stuff like that.
Get out of the office. Yeah, I would like to see her out and about in the real world. I would think by the end of season 8, there would be some sort of face-off with her and Cass, or her and Dean and Sam, where she gets the old, she gets killed.
I think the biggest revelation within the episode is that there's an angel tablet now.
Yeah, so that'll close off heaven then? Is that what that was? Yeah.
Yeah, well, there's a tablet for the angels, and we know previously that there's a tablet for the Leviathans, which says how to kill them. There's a tablet how to seal hell, and now there's an angel tablet. So is the angel tablet about how to seal heaven? Like, maybe God created the angel tablet thinking if the angels get interfering too much, maybe they need to be closed off from Earth. So maybe this is a way to close heaven, or maybe it's for something else. Who knows?
Yeah, I really hope at some point we meet God and find out why he's been all this time. And I hope we see Death again soon, because I love him. But yeah, the tablet thing was pretty cool. And I'm kind of wondering where this takes season 8 in terms of, like, it'll probably be down to a clincher at the end as to which, you know, where heaven or hell gets closed off. I was kind of thinking it'd be interesting if there was a human tablet, and not necessarily that, like, closed off Earth or whatever, but like a tablet that would just, like, it would be some sort of thing that killed all the humans. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was kind of what I thought that revelation might be.
Yeah, and who knows what else Alfie the angel said to Crowley, because I think there was more than just the fact that there's an angel tablet. So, because Crowley got into the deep internal programming of the angel, so he knows, like, he knows stuff that the angel himself didn't even know.
Yeah. Was it me, or was it, we didn't know that the angel weapons could kill demons as well, right?
Yeah, I think we knew that.
Because I don't remember that, and I remember just thinking that was, like, super handy that those rods can now kill demons. I don't know, maybe I just forgot about it.
No, I think season 6, when I think it was like the mid-season finale, when Meg was in it, and then that's when her and Cass had their little makeout session, and she took his angel blade, and I think she used it to fend off against demons and hellhounds and stuff.
Okay, so it's just my bad memory then.
Yeah, I don't really, like, I don't know why they had to go ahead and say it, you know, because it's already been shown in the show that it kills other things besides angels.
Yeah, I guess not everyone watches every episode. Those foolish people. I absolutely loved the song choice they used for the previously. I thought it was hilarious. Because usually, you know, they're using rock songs, and obviously now they're using, with the budget cuts and stuff, they're using slightly lesser or smaller ones. But the choice to do, like, Kathmandu, because it was probably, you know, they could probably afford it. I just thought it was, like, genius. Why haven't they done that before? It's hilarious. It's brilliant.
Yeah, I remember having a big smile on my face when it played at the start of the episode. It was just, you know, it was a nice little way to welcome Supernatural back.
Yeah, it was nice, you know, because usually for the whatever you want to call it, the New Year returns, they'll have, obviously, the kind of so far this kind of little thing for this so far this season. And they always kind of have some sort of rock song, so I kind of just expected it to go into that. But then when it comes out with Kathmandu, it was a really nice, refreshing change that just put a big grin on my face.
Do you think that we've seen the last of Benny?
The last of Benny? No. I feel like they might be heading towards, we return to him and he's gone off the wagon.
Yeah, because I kept hoping throughout the entire episode, I kept thinking that Dean would bring Benny in to go up against Crowley and stuff, and so it'd be Cass, Dean, and Benny, old purgatory buddies, going in and, you know, just like old times, and taking out demons and shit like that. I was hoping that would happen, but it didn't.
Yeah, I was just expecting him to eat that family, to be honest, that he was watching.
Oh, Benny, Benny, Benny. Another big part of the episode, Sam and Dean had another bitch fight.
Yawn.
It happens at least once or twice a season. Every season.
Once or twice an episode, more like.
Yeah, and this time Sam's flashbacks obviously caught up with him in the last episode, so we saw him interacting with Amelia and stuff like that, and I feel really bad for her, but it seems like, unless they're gonna bring her back, it seems like that entire flashback thing and the whole character of Amelia was just wasted.
Yeah, I kind of was like, if they're not going to bring her back, was like, okay then, well, you know, was it just to give Sam a little more depth this season, or was it, or is she going to come back in and she's going to get killed and it's going to be some big, you know, oh, you know, blah, blah, blah thing. But if that's her done, then it just feels like we could have got more out of that.
I hope they don't just, like, bring her back to kill her, because I think Sam, you know, Sam really wants a normal life and he deserves to be happy and all that stuff, but I think it would just be treading old territory if they brought her back just to kill her off. You know, yet another love interest of one of the brothers dies.
Yeah, I feel like all the women on the show die.
Yeah, except for Lisa. She didn't die. She just got her memory erased. Alrighty, that was it for this week's episode of the Talking TV Podcast. We thank you all for listening. And hey, any feedback, any more feedback that anyone has to give us, it's greatly appreciated. And hopefully we'll get to some more shows as the year goes on, as things start premiering and stuff like that. So thank you all for listening. I'm Cody.
I'm Fergus.
And have a week.
Bye.
I love unicorns.
What, Dad? Girls are crazy about unicorns.